afternoon. My name is Andrea, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Water Quality Standards Regulatory Changes conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Rubio. You may begin your conference.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Grace Rubio, and I am located at EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C. I want to welcome you to this listening session on EPA's proposed rulemaking to revise the Water Quality Standards Regulation. We are at an early stage in this effort, and that's why we're holding these informal opportunities to gather your ideas. What we hear from you and others in these sessions can help us in formulating our proposal. There will be other opportunities next year for more formal comment after we actually publish the details of our proposal in the Federal Register. As you will learn in a few minutes, we've been taking a close look at the EPA regulation which governs water quality standards to see if we can improve its effectiveness in helping restore and maintain the integrity of the nation's waters. We have come up with a targeted set of changes to the regulation, and we've outlined those in the Federal Register notice a few weeks ago. This is the start of a rulemaking effort that should result in a formal proposal in the Federal Register in the summer of 2011, forgive me. For the next 20 minutes, we will be using the briefing document that was posted on our website to describe our thinking. If you have that briefing in front of you, we will lead you through it slide by slide. We're now on slide number one. If you don't have the briefing, that's also okay. We will cover the important points verbally, and the slides will still be on our website for future reference. I'm turning now to slide number two. Our purpose today is to solicit your views on the specific provisions EPA is considering for this rulemaking. We will begin by providing a short overview of our proposal and why we think changes to the regulation might be appropriate. But we want to try to keep it short so that most of the call can be devoted to hearing your views. Slide number three shows our schedule. As you can see, we are at an early stage in our rulemaking. EPA has not made any final decisions on the content of the proposal. Those decisions will be made after we talk with you, as well as we have similar sessions with states, tribes, and other stakeholders. As you can see on the slide, after we publish the proposed rule in the summer of next year, there will be a 60-day formal public comment period. I'm turning now to slide number four. Now to give you more information on the proposal, I'd like to introduce Christina Christensen. Christina?
Thank you, Grace. Slide four provides an outline of what I'll be discussing today. I will begin with some background on what water quality standards are and why we're considering revising our National Water Quality Standards Regulation. I will then give some detail about each of the six areas we're considering for revision, which are listed on slide four. So turning to slide five, what are water quality standards? Under the Clean Water Act, water quality standards are provisions of state, tribal, or federal law approved by EPA that describe the desired condition of a water body or the level of protection. Standards are the foundation for other programs of the Act, such as discharge permits, that impose enforceable water quality-based controls. And standards consist of three major components: designated uses, water quality criteria, and anti-degradation policies, and can include optional general policies such as variances or mixing zones. Slide number six shows that the Clean Water Act gives states and authorized tribes the primary role to set standards. Authorized tribes are federally recognized Indian tribes that EPA has found eligible to run standards programs, and this is known as Treatment in a Manner Similar to a State, or TAS. And as of today, 45 tribes have been approved for TAS. The Clean Water Act requires states and tribes to review their standards every 3 years. If they decide new or revised standards are needed, they must adopt these amendments and submit them to EPA for review. The Clean Water Act calls on EPA to review and approve standards within 60 days of submission or disapprove within 90 days. If EPA approves the standards, they can then be used for all purposes under the Clean Water Act, including setting permit limits or developing total maximum daily loads. The Clean Water Act also authorizes the EPA Administrator to determine that federal water quality standards are needed to replace or augment state and tribal standards and to promulgate them as binding standards. Now let's consider the National Standards Regulation on slide number 7. The regulation simply adds detail to what the Clean Water Act says on designated uses, water quality criteria, and anti-degradation. It requires states and tribes to engage the public before revising their standards, and it specifies the roles of states, tribes, and EPA for administering standards. Please turn to slide number 8 now. So why is EPA considering revising this regulation? Well, the main parts of EPA's regulation have been in place since 1983. They've provided a solid foundation for controlling water quality. But there are practical reasons for initiating this rulemaking. As we've implemented the 1983 regulation, some important issues have come up again and again that the regulation does not explicitly address. This can waste time and resources, and we'd like to improve that situation. Slide number 9 lists some of the work we did before settling on the specific areas we'd like to improve. In 2008, EPA developed a list of over 40 potential regulatory revisions that might help provide clarity and national consistency and lead to environmental improvements. In developing this list, we considered recurring policy issues as well as case law from the past 25 years. We also reviewed our 1998 advance notice of proposed rulemaking, and we considered the comments we received on it. In addition, we held preliminary consultations with several state water quality standards managers, and we consulted with EPA regional experts to get a sense of where regulatory revisions were most needed. To narrow the field of over 40-plus potential revisions, EPA managers also considered how well the current regulation addressed recurring issues, whether it was well-equipped to handle emerging issues, and whether sufficient flexibility is provided to states and tribes when needed. Based on our review, we've narrowed our focus to 6 specific areas, and I will take you through each of these in turn. We're now on slide number 10, and slide number 10 summarizes our 6 targeted areas, and I will take you through each of them in more detail. When I'm done, we'll be asking for your views on what we presented today. You might want to make a note of any comments you have as we go along and save them for the feedback part of this conference call. And of course, we're very welcome to views that support our ideas, but we'd also be very interested in hearing your views and any possible unintended consequences of changing the regulation in a specific area. And we also welcome any specific suggestions for changes that you do or do not wish to see in this proposal. Please turn to slide number 11 on anti-degradation. Our current regulation sets a national policy of protecting existing uses and preventing the lowering of high water quality unless necessary to accommodate important economic or social development. It also specifies that states and authorized tribes must adopt specific anti-degradation policies. All states and tribes have adopted policies in accordance with the regulation, and we do not see a need to change this. We are concerned, however, with the implementation of these policies. Although many states have done a good job of implementation, some states have not even identified anti-degradation implementation methods, despite the regulation's requirement to do so. We recognize that the current regulation does not specify what the implementation methods must include, but only requires them to be consistent with the anti-degradation policy. As a possible change, EPA is considering modifying the regulation to specify that anti-degradation implementation methods must meet specific minimum requirements. To do this, EPA is considering adding a paragraph that would specify minimum implementation elements to be included in state or tribal standards. A minimum element, for example, could be the state or tribe's process for identifying high-quality waters. EPA is also considering requiring that anti-degradation implementation methods be adopted into state and tribal water quality standards rather than simply being identified. The methods would thus be subject to EPA review and approval. Our current thinking is that these changes would bring more consistent application, clarity, and transparency to the protection of high-quality waters. Further, EPA's oversight role would be more clearly defined. The second area on slide 12 concerns the discretionary determination the EPA administrator can make that a revised or new standard is necessary to meet the requirements of the Act. This provision is in section 303(c)(4)(b) of the Clean Water Act. If such a determination is made, EPA must promptly propose a federal standard and promulgate a standard within 90 days of proposal. Over the years, there have been recurring instances of confusion or misunderstanding about what actually constitutes an EPA administrator's determination. For example, in some cases, EPA staff people have sent routine letters suggesting priorities for states to consider when revising their water quality standards. Some courts have construed these kinds of communications to states as official EPA administrator determinations that oblige EPA to promulgate water quality standards. EPA is considering clarifying in the Water Quality Standards Regulation that an administrator's determination must be signed by the administrator or someone he or she specifically authorizes and must include a statement that the document constitutes a determination under Section 303(c)(4)(b) of the Clean Water Act. EPA's current thinking is that this type of change could assure that it is clear when EPA has or has not made one of these determinations. This kind of change would allow EPA to continue to provide routine written suggestions to states and tribes without triggering the need for an immediate federal action. On slide 13, we'll turn to the topic of designated uses. Section 101(a)(2) of the Clean Water Act establishes a national goal, wherever attainable, of water quality that provides for the protection and propagation of fish, shellfish, and wildlife, and recreation in and on the water. If a state or tribe wants to remove one of these goal uses, our regulation requires it to demonstrate that attaining the designated use is not feasible for one of six specific factors. The state or tribe must also submit a use attainability analysis, a structured scientific assessment, of factors affecting attainment of designated uses. The regulation does not, however, specify which uses, if any, must be adopted to replace the use that is being removed. Furthermore, EPA's longstanding interpretation of the Act and regulation is that Section 101(a)(2) uses are attainable unless a state or tribe demonstrates otherwise. This interpretation is central to our Water Quality Standards Program. However, it's not articulated explicitly in the regulation. EPA is considering clarifying that designated uses reflecting the goals of the Clean Water Act are attainable unless otherwise demonstrated. States and authorized tribes must designate such uses unless they have conducted a use attainability analysis to support a lesser designated use, and EPA has approved that action. EPA is also considering clarifying that the highest attainable uses closest to the 101(a)(2) goal must be adopted if such a goal itself is not attainable. On slide 14, we discuss variances, or temporary changes to water quality standards. The current regulation allows states and authorized tribes to adopt variances as general policies for applying and implementing their water quality standards, and this is specified in Section 131(13) of the regulation. We would retain the state and tribal discretion. But the current regulation does not provide any specificity on how to use variances. So as a result, there is a lack of clarity on the proper use of variances. Furthermore, variances are sometimes repeatedly renewed without achieving environmental improvements in a water body. EPA is considering establishing explicit provisions to guide the use of variances. For example, EPA is considering a provision that requires all variances to have an expiration date. Such a change could provide regulatory clarity on what is an acceptable variance versus what is not. Slide number 15 addresses the reviews required every 3 years by the Clean Water Act, or triennial reviews, as we call them. The current regulation does not call for involving the public when states and tribes determine what they will focus on in their triennial reviews. This can have the effect of narrowing public input to those portions of standards that the state or tribe chooses to review. A second concern is that despite the availability of new scientific information, some states or tribes may not consider it in a timely fashion and thus may not always evaluate whether their current criteria continue to protect designated uses. EPA is considering revising its requirements to specify that states and authorized tribes must solicit and consider public comments in determining the scope of each triennial review. EPA is also considering establishing a new triennial requirement that states and authorized tribes must evaluate whether their current water quality criteria continue to be protective of designated uses, taking into consideration any new information that's become available since state or tribal criteria were adopted or last revised. This would clarify that states and tribes would need to consider EPA's most recent national recommended water quality criteria published under Section 304A. EPA's current thinking is that these changes will increase transparency by ensuring that stakeholders have input on the scope of triennial reviews. They could also strengthen oversight of whether state and tribal water quality criteria are being kept up to date and whether they continue to protect designated uses. Slide number 16 refers to three court decisions handed down since the regulation was last revised. The complete legal citations for these cases are available in EPA's Federal Register notice. EPA is considering codifying the results of these decisions in the regulation. First, EPA is considering revising the definition of water quality standards that appears in the regulation to reflect the results of a 2004 court case concerning Florida's impaired waters rule. In this case, some binding provisions of state law had the effect of changing water quality standards without EPA approval. The court decision and EPA's response to it more clearly define which kinds of provisions actually constitute water quality standards requiring EPA's review. Second, EPA is considering specifying that provisions which authorize compliance schedules are considered water quality standards and therefore must be submitted to EPA for review and approval. Compliance schedules govern the timing of water quality-based effluent limits in NPDES permits. This change will codify the results of a 1990 Environmental Appeals Board decision involving Starkist Carib Incorporated. Note that while authorizing provisions would be considered water quality standards, compliance schedules themselves are not. They are permitting provisions. Third, EPA is considering clarifying that states and authorized tribes must submit to EPA records of public participation that has occurred in reviewing and adopting standards. These records would include public comments and the state or tribe's responses to the comments. This change would codify the results of the 1996 decision involving standards affecting the city of Albuquerque. Codifying these three positions in regulation will help eliminate confusion and could minimize future litigation on these topics. This concludes our presentation of the proposal that EPA is developing. Slide 17 gives you several EPA websites for more information. They provide more information about these listening sessions and water quality standards in general. They also show where we will be posting the transcripts and recordings of these sessions and how you can provide your views and comments in writing if you want to add to your views expressed today. Please note again that these are just listening sessions at an early stage of the rulemaking process. There will still be a formal 60-day public comment period after the proposed rule is published in the summer of 2011. Thanks for your attention. I will now turn it back to Grace Robio.
Thank you, Christina. We're now going to turn to the heart of today's conference call, the feedback session. We're going to dedicate between 10 and 15 minutes to answer any clarifying questions you may have about anything you've heard in this presentation that leaves you puzzled. We would appreciate it if you could keep those initial questions short and limit them to questions of fact or clarifications of what you've heard. We are, after that, going to turn to taking your comments and views on the targeted regulatory revision EPA is considering. Operator, we're now going to turn to clarifying questions?
Yes, if you would like to ask a clarifying question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Albert Etner.
Hello?
Hi. Hi, Albert.
Okay, great. Do I understand correctly that we've got until September 3rd to comment on this, and then we won't have another opportunity to comment formally, at least, until you guys have selected what you're going to propose changes on?
Yes, that is correct. If you look at slide number 19, which I think is the last slide in our presentation, we have just made a note that if anyone is not able to make a comment today, we do have over 300 people on this call. We would encourage you to provide your comments to us by September 3rd. You can either send them by email, you can mail a hard copy as well. And we did just ask for September 3rd so people have time after these sessions, and that gives us some time to consider them as well as we move forward. And then your next chance after that will be during the formal 60-day public comment period next summer.
And your next question comes from the line of John Tack.
Hi, this is John Tack from Iowa. Just one clarifying question. Am I understanding correctly that you're saying that anti-dig implementation procedures are not currently required to be reviewed and approved?
Yes, that is correct. The way our regulation currently specifies that they must be identified, but it does not actually say that they're required, so therefore they don't need to be reviewed and approved by EPA.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Don Parrish. Mr. Parrish, your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much. I have actually two questions. The first relates to the first questioner, the part about the rulemaking that occurred, the advance notice of proposed rulemaking in 1998. Where can we find EPA's response to those comments, number one? And then number two, if, as in the second questioner asked, has EPA in their Federal Register notice made any attempt to justify, you know, the shift that they're trying to make with the anti-dig requirements, taking it from what it is now, requiring a listing of those procedures versus incorporating them into the permit or into the standard? Thank you.
Okay. With regards to your first question on the AMPRM, the AMPRM was published back in 1998, and it was an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, and then we never finalized that rulemaking. So I think while we received comments, we never prepared a formal response to those comments, since we never formalized that rulemaking. With regards to your second question, right now, you know, we're still in the information gathering portion of this rulemaking. So while the changes I outlined for anti-degradation are changes that we're considering making, you know, we haven't made any final decisions. But when we do, you know, in our proposed rulemaking, we'll be sure to outline or justify, you know, our rationale and our thinking behind making those changes.
And your next question comes from the line of Henry Darmalot.
Hi, it's Henry Bartholomew. The question is, I've looked at the website where the briefing slides were supposed to be, but I'm not finding them there. Could you give us an address where we can find the slides that you were using today?
Yes, we can. If you want to look at slide 17. Oh, you don't have the slide. Sorry, let me read that out to you. The address that you want to look at is https://water.epa.gov/laws/regs, that's one word, and it's /laws/guidance, again, that's one word, laws/guidance. /WQS_listening.cfm. So let me just repeat that one more time. I know it's a really long web address. http colon /water.epa.gov/laws-reg/laws-guidance/WQS_listening.cfm. And that is our website for our rulemaking and these listening sessions, and it will give you all sorts of information, including our PowerPoint presentation and as well how you can submit additional written comments.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Greg Goblet.
Hello. I have a question on slide 13. And it's pertaining to Section 101A2 of the Clean Water Act. And I was wondering, has there been any consideration towards expanding this definition to include agricultural uses, in particular, water that may be used for wash water for vegetables or fruit, or irrigation for ready-to-eat crops? And the thinking or understanding is we're all familiar with many of the outbreaks that have occurred in the past 5 or 6 years associated with produce, E. coli and spinach, for example, in California in 2006, things of that nature. And I was wondering, has any thought been given to address some of those issues?
Thank you for that question. And I think the short answer is no. The Clean Water Act defines Section 101A2 goal uses, and at this time our proposed rulemaking won't be proposing any changes to the language of the Clean Water Act.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Daniel Myers.
Daniel, in California, the North Coast region is indicating that they will not be filing or doing a triennial report this year. I wondered about whether that is considered an optional thing. We also, in this area, have gotten guidance on the completion of TMBL action plans or implementation plans. I wonder if the regulations are going to formalize a rational time frame for the states to do their implementation plans. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. In response to your first question about the triennial reviews being optional, according to the Clean Water Act and our regulations, triennial reviews should be held at least every 3 years. So that's the requirement outlined in our regulation. And could you just repeat your second question for me?
Yes. We've received guidance that implementation plans for TMDLs should be completed within, 7 to 9 years, something like that. But I'm not seeing that as a formal requirement. It seems like it's simply guidance and not in the regulations. I think it should be in the regulations if it's not.
The scope of this rulemaking is limited to the regulations that govern water quality standards. I believe that your question would fall in the context of the TMDL or total maximum daily loads regulations, which is outside the scope of this action.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Donna Long.
I concede. My question's been answered.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Gimmick Amit.
Gemma, and I had a question about your triennial review. Could you clarify how you envision the scope of the triennial review? Should the reevaluation be limited to the new information based on EPA's most recent water quality criteria, or is it open to any new information developed by the scientific community as a whole?
Yeah, We're looking at each other here trying to figure out who's going to answer. The idea here is to have require that states and tribes take into consideration any new information, including EPA's recommended water quality criteria recommendations.
So how do we vet this new information? Are you going to provide the guidance to the type of new information that would be acceptable to consider? Because there's always all kinds of new information available, and it would be nice to have some kind of guidance to determine what can be considered and what should be left until it's further developed.
I think you've made a very good comment, and we'll take note of how we will handle that in rulemaking if we move forward with that particular revision.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Bill Payne.
Hello. Simple question. I was wondering if the water quality standard regulation is going to be open to other issues, basically anything in the standards other than those six that you've listed.
Right now, the only changes we are considering making are in the specific six areas outlined in today's presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Pam Homer.
Yeah, this is Pam Homer, New Mexico. Our anti-JEG implementation procedure is probably 40 pages long, and so I'm wondering how a requirement to include anti-JEG implementation in the water quality standards regulation jives with the Florida decision about kind of a more restricted view of what constitutes a water quality standard, which I understand to be, you know, magnitude, frequency, duration. How do those ideas fit together?
I think that's a really good comment. That's something that we'll definitely think about and talk about on our end. So thank you for sharing that.
Your next question comes from the line of Ann Hill.
Hi. I wanted to ask a follow-up question to the first caller's question about the deadline for comments. The briefing says September 3rd, but on August 20th, I received an email from Thomas Gardner that indicated that the cutoff date was September 10th, and anything included by that date would be in the docket. I'm working with some of the statewide groups in California to prepare comments, and we had timed the preparation of the comments for the September 10th deadline. So I guess the question is, will you take them through September 10th?
Yes, we will take them through September 10th. I think we encourage everyone to submit any written comments as soon as you can. So if you can get them in by September 3rd, that would be great, but we will accept them through September 10th.
Great, thank you.
I just want to add that comments, people can provide comments anytime. It's not a formal comment period. Comments will go to the docket, but in order to help make those comments the most useful to us at going forward to have discussions with the senior decision makers at EPA, the mid-September timeframe, whether it's September 3rd or the 10th, is the most helpful to us in preparing for those discussions. But comments can be sent in at any time, again, since it's not a formal comment period.
And your next question comes from one of Sandy Grusisi.
Hi, this is Randy Payne. I had a question backing up to variance, and I missed part of that discussion. Are they to be included, you're saying, under this consideration in formal trial review and then in regs specifically?
Are you asking whether variances would be now considered part of our water quality standards, I guess?
Yes, part of the state's process.
Well, variances are currently described in the existing regulations as an optional element of water quality standards. I think that the revisions that we are contemplating regarding variances have more to do with how variances are applied and in what circumstances they're appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Lois
Principal LeGarrity.
Hi. My question goes back to the answer about the ANPRAM. Even though EPA did not provide a formal response to those comments, is there a place where the comments were collected and that they could be distributed to the public?
Thank you. Before I answer that, I just want to indicate that we'll have time for one more clarifying question before we move on. And in response to that, no, we do not have a place where we collected all those comments. I think we received over 3,000 comments to the ANPRM, and we don't have a compilation of those. We'll take one more clarifying question.
Your next clarifying question comes. Your last clarifying question comes from the line of Scott Thomas.
Hi, my question is on designated uses, slide 13. You discussed that the concept is that you'd require, if the use couldn't be attained, that the highest attainable use closest to the goal must be adopted. I'm wondering, are you assuming that you'll just rely on the states to define the hierarchy of uses and the tiers, or do you envision some sort of federal mandate on how you tier uses?
We would plan to provide some sort of guidance or discussion in our proposed rulemaking about what it is we intend by the concept of a highest attainable use. We tend to think of the highest attainable use as the use closest to the 101A2 goal uses of the Clean Water Act. But we'll take a note of that, and we'll add a discussion in our proposed rulemaking on that. Thank you.
We're now going to turn to comments regarding the content of our rulemaking, proposed rulemaking, both comments and views. And I want to maybe go back to something Christina said at the very beginning of our conference call, where she made a point of wanting to hear about your any concerns that you may have about unintended consequences of our proposal or specific revisions that you would like to see or would not like to see in our proposal. Operator, I'm turning now to you on those kinds of comments.
If you'd like to make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first comment comes from the line of Matt Rota.
Hey, this is Matt Rota down in New Orleans, and I won't be able to get to all of my questions. I want to get everybody else a chance to speak too, but I have some comments on Tier 2 anti-degradation. First of all, I encourage you all to make sure that anti-degradation Tier 2 is applied to the majority of waters in the states and put that in the regs, because several states are trying to basically get away with having as few Tier 2 waters as possible is their goal. And one way to encourage covering most of the water bodies is using a parameter-by-parameter approach. Also, I know some of the states are struggling of how to apply Tier 2 anti-degradation to general permits and also 401 certifications, and I would request that in this rulemaking that that those two things are specifically addressed with ways that EPA says that needs to be done. And another question that I have is about the triennial review. And you say that they need that the states need to solicit and consider public comments. I would request that that's made a little more strong in that they, in some mechanism, to make sure that not only are they soliciting them, but that they're being taken seriously and not just explained away. So some way to make sure that public comments are not only solicited but taken seriously and some sort of ramifications if they aren't taken seriously. Thanks.
Your next comment comes from the line of Steve Brown. Mr. Brown, your line is open. Your next comment comes from the line of Gerald Green.
Hi, this is Jerry. On your slide 16, I had a question or a statement regarding submittal of public comments. It seems odd that we speak in terms of having to submit both to the state as well as EPA on these things for the record, in that it seems there would be a high probability the record would then essentially get out of conformity between the two regulatory agencies. It seems best that you should keep it going in one direction, i.e. locals commenting to the state, and then a copy goes to the feds rather than risking conflicting records.
Okay, thank you. And just to clarify, our intention is that the state or tribe would submit their records, or they would submit them to the state, and then the state would submit them to EPA. There wouldn't be a double set.
And your next comment comes from the line of Carter Strickland.
I had a clarifying question, but we'll rephrase it for this part of the proposal. Our question related to slide 13, designated uses, and whether EPA was considering how it would apply it to existing state designations that aren't in the 101A2 list. And I guess the way for you to consider it in terms of unintended consequences is that you should consider the impact on state agency resources and whether they'll have the ability to work through a backlog, if that's what you intend, of UAA determinations.
Your next comment comes from the line of Linda Sheed.
Yes, thank you. This is also related to the designated uses on slide 13. My concern is that there is a perception, at least, that the state is using use attainability analyses as a way to remove streams from the 303D list because they have so many and they're trying to find a way to, you know, trim that down. And I understand the workload issue, but on the other hand, the goal is clean water, and so I have a question A about how you are deeming a stream as being a use as being unattainable, and secondly that you are ensuring that there's some kind of oversight that it is not being used, as I said, as a way just to trim down the 303D list instead of trying to achieve water quality. Thank you.
I want to, operator, I just want to acknowledge that we are taking good notes on the comments that are being provided despite the fact that we're not responding because this is more of a comment session. So want to make sure that people know that we are listening.
Thank you, ma'am. And your next comment comes from the line of Bud Hart.
Hello, yeah, this is Bud Hart in Colorado. I guess I have a concern about, has EPA given any consideration to the conflicts between the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act and those compliance schedules for, you know, emerging contaminants?
Thank you. That's something that we'll consider as we move ahead with our rulemaking.
Thank you.
Your next comment comes from the line of Leakin Laura.
Howdy. I just had a question on the anti-degradation or something to consider for anti-degradation implementation. I'd like you to consider how that program will work in the context of general permits.
Yes, thank you. We have heard that, and it's something we will consider as we move ahead.
Your next comment comes from the line of Jerry Black.
Hi, this is Jerry Black from Oklahoma. First of all, I think that all implementation methods should be reviewed and approved by EPA. In addition, several states have several state agencies which develop and implement methods that are specific to industries and or activities that they regulate. That the implementation methods for Oklahoma differs depending upon the activities that they regulate. In addition, that some of these implementation methods are not adequate to prevent anti-degradation of surface waters for both numerical and narrative water quality criteria. And in addition, analytical methods utilized in verifying the surface water for meeting the water quality criteria should be methods that are approved by EPA, not only approved but also reviewed. Six, that some of these areas are narrative standards. And, for example, for oil and grease, they should be maintained to prevent visible sheens of oil or gobblers of oil and grease in or the waters. In addition, there's another narrative standard that that solids that are not natural sources, such as iron that would come out of a discharge, not be existing. And I think that those standards should be held to prevent anti-degradation for implementation methods. Thank you and have a good day.
Your next comment comes from the line of Samantha Brown.
Hello, this is Mike Apgar speaking on Samantha's behalf. This is with respect to anti-degradation. If streams haven't been properly tested, they automatically are listed as high-quality streams. And I think that's going to create a problem just simply with respect to your desire for implementation. I suspect that that's why a lot of these implementation plans have not been carried out, because it's a very liberal list of high-quality streams, because there has not been enough money or effort placed in properly testing the streams to identify their intended uses.
Your next comment comes from the line of Bill Payne.
Hello. I understand that the regulations are not going to be changed or not going to be open to discussion or comments on other than the six areas. However, I would like for EPA to consider the possibility of how to address water quality standard applicability in ephemeral and or headwater streams, because quite frankly, quite often they don't apply. There's no way to correctly apply them, and therefore they're basically applied incorrectly. And I know that's been a concern at conferences I've been to where EPA has been present, so I would like and would like to hope that EPA would give that some consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next comment comes from the line of Eddie Steffinger.
Yeah, hello. Thank you. I guess my comment is this. In California, of course, we have a very strong state water board with a very extensive permitting process, waiver process, things like that. And I guess I heard the comment during the presentation when we're going through the slides on anti-degradation that some states are not implementing following EPA standards, and there's some confusion about the implementation. It sounds like that portion of this whole rule package that deals with anti-degradation is to get everybody on the same page. And I guess my comment and my fear is that in states where states have already met or exceeded the EPA standards, that we're going to see a fallout and a promulgation of more state standards that may not be necessary as a result of this. What we'd like to see, of course, is that if there are states that are not being current or not following the standards, that those states work with EPA to go ahead and get up to the standards, but the states that are meeting or exceeding the standards, we see this portion of the proposed rules as not being necessary.
Your next comment comes from the line of John Tack.
I have a few comments. I think I can keep them pretty quick. The first is on administrator determinations. If the rule is going to be adopted clarifying this, it's important that any disapproval of a water quality standard meet that criteria, and that it's clear that it moves us toward the process of promulgation, not directly, of course, to promulgation, but down that road, and that it would satisfy the requirements to get there. On variances, if EPA would like to clarify the procedure for variances, I would just point to the federal standards for Kansas and Puerto Rico, which contain a variance procedure which calls for the variance to go into the permit rather than be adopted through a separate water quality standard. I think that EPA got it right there, and any future rules should conform to what you've done in the past. I guess lastly, I'll skip one here for time. The court decision on public comment says that public comments are required to be part of the package to show that public participation was received and considered. I think there needs to be clarification as to how that public comment is treated at the EPA review level, whether the state is expected to disprove all comments or merely consider all comments, and whether EPA is going to revisit those issues and make up their own individual determination, or just review it for the purpose of determining whether the state has considered the comment. That's all I have.
Your next comment comes from the line of Rachel Kahn.
Yes, I was hoping that there would be some clarity provided by EPA as to guiding states on requiring public participation in the anti-degradation process in Tier 2 reviews specifically. And as part of that, to require states to have written anti-degradation analyses that can be reviewed by members of the public.
Your next comment comes from the line of Greg Goblet. Sir, if you place your phone on mute, please unmute your phone at this time. Your next comment comes from the line of Lee Garrison.
Hi, this is Steve Brown. I'm going to try to do this time without cutting myself off. I'm on Lee's phone right now. The question I wanted to ask a minute ago is whether there was anything in the uses portion of EPA's rule writing that was intended to allow states to change their designated uses.
I just want to respond to that. We currently have ways in which states can evaluate their uses and refine them as needed, you know, through the UAA process or through adopting a use subcategory, and none of those components will change. So those tools would still be available.
Your next comment comes from the line of John Royal.
This is Bach McClure. We've got a situation with our MS4 system and NPDES permitted system, which currently the regulations that are being promulgated both at the state and the federal level appear to be requiring us to meet the designated uses in our MS4 system, such as roadside ditches, stormwater ponds, that sort of thing, which I find it hard to believe that that's the intent of EPA, since these systems are intended to transport stormwater to treatment systems that will then remove the pollutants. So I would hope that EPA would consider adding specific language to exempt MS4 systems in general, or depending on the expansion of the NPDES system, NPDES systems specifically from the nutrient criteria. And that's it.
Internet comment.
I want to respond to that comment. I guess I'm struggling to understand or to figure out if that's within the scope of this rulemaking, and if you think so, under what theme would it be addressed?
Yeah, it would be under the designated uses. Currently, under your definitions, 131.3, mm-hmm. as the water quality standards are applied to all designated use for all the waters of the United States, and Army Corps is currently using the wet connection to go upstream through our MS4 system as any wet connection becomes a water of the United States, which then means that these criteria would apply to the MS4 system under that theory. And the designated uses, we would then be expected to supply shellfish harvesting, wildlife, et cetera, in every roadside ditch, which isn't going to happen, but proving that would be untenable. So I think under the designated uses section would be a good place to make it clear what the regulation was trying to apply to.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Okay.
Your next comment comes from the line of Samantha Brown.
Yes, this is with respect to uses. There's a lot of talk about utilizing a use attainability analysis, but the problem that exists is that is obtaining permission to actually go through a UAA. So I was wondering if there would be the potential of creating some type of guidance on applying for a UAA or utilization of a UAA. Quite often regulators won't permit it.
And again, if you'd like to make a comment, please do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Well, you think of further comments to provide to us, I'd like to cover slide number 19, which is our last slide in our presentation. If you have any additional thoughts or views after this call, there are a couple ways to proceed. You can communicate with us by sending us an email to the email address shown on the slide. And for those of you that don't have the slide in front of you, the email address is shpdcomments@epa.gov. I repeat, shpdcomments, all one word, at epa.gov. Or you could write a letter to the address shown on the slide, which is Thomas J. Gartner, Office of Science and Technology. And the mail code, it's important, it's 4305 TSN Tom, Office of Water, U.S. EPA, 1200 Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, NW, that would be, Washington, D.C., and the zip code is 20460. Any written comments you choose to submit would be most useful, that we could have those within 2 weeks by September 3rd, although we've talked about extending that a little bit, but really no longer than September 10th. Since these are very early listening sessions, we will not be responding in writing to your views, but they will be put on the public record in our docket, which is headquarters/OW-2010-0606. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with how the EPA docket works, any comments provided will be available to the public at the regulations.gov website. So it looks like we may have a couple more comments. I'll turn to the operator again.
Thank you, ma'am. Again, if you'd like to make a comment, please press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next comment comes from the line of Gerald Green.
Hi. Again, in the effort of transparency, we'd like to consider how this moving forward of these regs could essentially provide greater input by the stakeholder community in the decisions of states and tribes. In other words, we do have a problem, in my opinion, with some of our states and tribes not considering the comments of significant numbers of stakeholders and finding other issues that they feel are more appropriate, in particular, both with triennial reviews and use attainability analyses. We often feel that the use attainability analyses are warranted and our local regulatory agencies may not agree, and there should be some provision that if a significant number of the stakeholders convey this request, that it should be considered at the local arena. Thank you.
And again, if you'd like to make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next comment comes from the line of Philip Parsons.
I have a question about your comments today regarding designated uses and your explanation of slide 13. My question is this. It appears from what you said today that to retain a lower use that's been approved by EPA in Florida, where I'm from, we have a number of Class 4 agricultural canals, and there are different criteria for those canals than for the Class 3 recreation propagation of wildlife. And if I understood your comments, and perhaps I didn't, your intent is to require a use attainability analysis to retain those uses. This isn't a question of lowering or raising, but retaining. Or is it your intent to require a use attainability analysis if the state intends to retain a lower use?
The way our regulation is currently worded is that if a state is
removing a 101A2 use or not adopting a 101A2 use to begin with, then a use attainability analysis is required. And we're not changing that portion of the reg.
I understand. But if you want to retain, in our case, a Class 4 use, are use by the change in the regulation going to require a use attainability analysis? You're not changing the use at all. You're just continuing the use as it now exists. Are you going to require a use attainability analysis under these changes you're contemplating?
A use attainability analysis, I don't think, would necessarily be required at that exact moment. However, our regulation would require that a state or tribe review their uses every 3 years, and if a use that was previously not attainable is now attainable, you know, our regulation would require that designated use be revised.
Okay, that's consistent with your current practice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next comment comes from the line of Ann Cohen.
My question was sort of similar to the last person regarding use attainability and things like culverts under 14-lane highways. How are the same issue that he mentioned comes into play in those types of areas too, where in some cases you have to wonder if it's worth the resources to have to do the studies to prove that you don't have and won't have shellfish or fish or whatever.
And your next comment comes from the line of Scott Thomas.
Hi, I'm going to speak a little bit out of turn here because I don't work for the state regulatory agency or the state at all. I'm in the private sector. But it strikes me that depending on what you do going forward with this proposal, you're potentially imposing some significant new obligations on the states in terms of the amount of work required to do a full-blown triennial review. I know at least in my state, which is Arizona, there are pretty significant budget and personnel constraints right now at the state DEQ, and probably will be for a couple of years until hopefully this recession ends. I just wonder if, and this is addressing something not in your proposal, but I wonder if a three-year cycle to do all this stuff is entirely reasonable in those circumstances. Whether, in other words, ought to be instead of maybe every 3 years, every 5 years, if you're going to make a state go back and look at every designated use, determine whether every water, determine whether uses should be changed, every new scientific criteria comes up by EPA, et cetera. So I throw that out for what it's worth.
Our proposal at this juncture doesn't consider changing the requirement in our regulations that states conduct triennial reviews. So are you suggesting that we consider changing that?
I guess, yes, I am, but I think you've been talking to the states, and if the states aren't raising that concern to you, then I'm probably speaking out of school. But it seems to me that's something you ought to think about if you're going to go ahead with everything you've proposed.
I guess two thoughts. One is that the Clean Water Act actually requires a triennial review in a three-year cycle, so that's where it would have to be changed to change that. I think probably maybe more to the heart of your comment is that what we were intending to talk about here is that states open up their scope to comment. It's not that states would have to, you know, review everything in their water quality standards every 3 years. There are some states that use like a rotating basin approach, and under this proposal, that would still be okay as long as there was a time and a place where that was put out to the public and the public got to comment on whether there was something else outside of a particular basin, let's say, for example. So it's not that states couldn't operate in ways to manage their resources like they do now. It's just in addition to that, providing, if they're not going to open the entire scope up to review, providing an opportunity for comment on what else people would like to see reviewed.
Again, if you would like to make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Operator, while we wait for further comments,
I want to remind people that we this line is open until 2:30, so we will stay here and receive and obtain your comments up to that time. I would also like to remind people that we have a second listening session scheduled for this Thursday, August 26th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, or would that be Eastern Standard Time? So if you have further questions, that might be another opportunity to provide comments, which may allow you to think some more about what you, between now and then, what you want to comment on. So it turns, it seems like we have another comment, so I'll turn it back to the operator.
Your next comment comes from the line of Betty Yee. I have a clarifying question on slide 13. Previously, you had said that EPA's intent is only to provide revisions in these particular areas. Is the purpose of slide 13 not generally the uses, but only to specify what happens in the event of a UAA for a 101A2 use?
That is one area in the realm of uses that we're considering making revisions to.
So you'll accept comments on the more general category of having EPA look at definitions of uses and how the UAA process works?
Yes, if you'd like to submit a written comment or share something with us now, we'd be happy to hear that.
Okay, I was just trying to establish what the scope of this particular area was. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from the line of Jerry Black.
This is Jerry Black, again, from Oklahoma. Additional comment I'd like to have is that that streams have already been cleaned according to implementation standards or policies that are being used right now, that these streams and water quality bodies be reexamined to make sure that they meet the new or the approved and the ones that have been reviewed by EPA methods to make sure that it's been adequately cleaned up and that discharges are not harming beneficial uses. Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to make a comment, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
Are there any clarifying questions from the earlier part of our presentation that people may not have had a chance to ask?
If you'd like to ask a clarifying question, you may also do so by pressing star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question or comment comes from the line of Fred Anden.
Andy. Actually, one clarifying question, but I was also pushing I was also going to raise a couple of comments. the clarifying question was on variances. The statements EPA makes about ensuring proper use of variances, reducing the possibility of inappropriate use, are very vague, and I'm not really sure what's referred to there. Are there instances where variances have been abused, used inappropriately, and if so, what are those, and how specifically is the agency thinking about addressing them? So that's my clarifying question. I don't know if you want to address that, and then I can make my other couple of comments.
Sure, I'll address that first part right now. I think as an example of how a variance might be misused was something I mentioned in the earlier part of the call, which is that variances are often or may be just renewed over and over again without really leading to any kind of environmental improvements in a water body. That's one example of something that we would hope to try and address by putting some conditions on variances. Another example is we've also seen variances in place that don't have a 303C Water Quality Standards approval action associated with them. So those are some of the situations that we would hope to improve on by putting some expectations for variances into our regulations.
Christina, I would like to add that variances are, if I'm not mistaken, a single word currently in our regulations, and we would like to be able to explain them better so that they can be
more used when they're appropriately, you know, appropriate to be used.
And we'd be happy to hear your views and comments on some of the boundaries we might put on variances or that you'd like to see.
Okay. Thank you. The other comments I had were really in the triangle review area. One of them was EPA seems to be paying a lot of attention to whether states are adequately considering comments. But EPA doesn't impose any obligation on itself to consider comments in approving state water quality standards. In fact, there's no opportunity for public comment when EPA approves a state water quality standard, only when it disapproves. So one thing I think ought to be considered is what's the due process requirement when EPA reviews and approves a state water quality standard, and how can it provide adequate stakeholder input in that circumstance instead of just approving without any opportunity for people to interact with the agency. The other thought I had on triennial review was that EPA seems to be very interested in having states consider whether their criteria are protective of uses, and that's good, but that should also go the other way, which is the states should, if they're going to review the criteria to see if they're protective of uses, also consider whether they now are more stringent than needed to protect the uses, whether the criteria are more stringent than needed to protect the uses, or if the standards are not attainable. It's a full review. It should be done, not just done in one direction only. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your next comment comes from the line of Ann Cohen.
I'm looking at 13 also in your possible changes. If I understand this correctly, basically states would have to go back and look at every water body they have now or segment to determine if they are at the highest attainable use, with those uses I'm assuming being the highest attainable that you have listed, propagation of fish, shellfish, wildlife, recreation, and the others, and therefore that the only way to put in something that's less than the goal that's stated at the top would be to expend resources to prove that a culvert or some other water body cannot meet the standards. And I am extremely concerned about the amount of resources that this will entail that could, in fact, be better used on water quality protection and not water quality assessment.
Thank you. And I think, you know, there's a couple options that we could possibly consider. For example, you know, we could consider that states and tribes must look at the highest attainable use only when removing a designated use, or we could say that they states and tribes should consider highest attainable use for all waters at all times. I mean, those are just some of the options we might consider. But you know, we understand that your concern is one of resources, and we'll certainly make a note of that.
Your next comment comes from the line of Linda Roeder.
Hi, I just wanted to clarify, I wanted to get the spellings of your names and your titles, please.
Sure, my name is Grace Robiou, R-O-B-I-O-U, and I'm the chief of the National Water Quality Standards Branch in the Office of Water.
And my name is Christina Christensen, C-H-R-I-S-T-E-N-S-E-N. And I'm a staff member in the Water Quality Standards Branch, the National Water Quality Standards Branch.
Thank you.
And your next question or comment comes from the line of Greg Smith.
This is Greg Smith from Iowa. On page 16, I have a question about
second bullet point, compliance schedule authorizing provision. What is meant by that? What's the scope of that?
What was your question again?
On the second bullet on slide 16.
Right.
It says specify compliance schedule authorizing provisions must be adopted. Is this a procedural definition of what entails in the compliance schedule?
We don't intend it to be. Maybe there's a wording thing here. I think the concept is to clarify in as part of our water quality standards regulations that compliance schedule authorizing provisions must be adopted as part of the standard and therefore must be approved by EPA and reviewed and approved by EPA. I think currently compliance schedule authorizing provisions may be reviewed and approved as standards.
Our current regulation doesn't speak to them in particular, but that's the current practice.
So this is kind of codifying what we believe is our current thinking
on this issue.
And your next question or comment comes from the line of Hope Taylor. Ms. Taylor, your line is open. Your next question or comment. I'm sorry. Your next question or comment comes from the line of Lauren Kaleski.
Hi, this is Lauren Kaleshek in Austin, and I was just wondering on the anti-degradation scope if you guys already had in mind some what you consider to be minimum elements that y'all would want to put in or that y'all would want to see in the implementation methods.
Sure. I think one example of a minimum element is the process a state or tribe has in place for identifying high-quality waters. A second minimum element example could be the process for a Tier 2 review. These are the kind of things that we would really be interested in hearing from all of you if you had any suggestions on what you'd like to see as a minimum element.
And again, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question or comment comes from the line of Hope Taylor.
Sorry, I muted myself inadvertently before. I just wanted to make a very affirming comment that especially in the areas of anti-degradation variances and triennial review, your previous scoping obviously incorporated a lot of understanding from public advocates, probably nationally, that share my view that those have been very problematic in terms of realizing the goals of the Clean Water Act. And a lot of the sort of subsidiary comments that you've made have recognized those problems and frustrations. So I just really wanted to thank you for identifying those. And in my written comments, I will give some more examples as to how that's played out on our state level, but I know many of my national colleagues have expressed the same concerns. Thanks.
Thank you.
And again, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. And there are no further questions or comments at this time.
Operator, I think we want to stay here until 2:30.
Yes, ma'am.
Allow people an opportunity to have other comments if they come to mind. And then we'll wrap it up.
Yes, ma'am. And again, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Your next question or comment comes from the line of Don Parrish.
Yes, it may be a tough question. As you guys look at what you've proposed here, have you determined where additional litigation may spring from final agency action within these proposals? How much more should we expect, and how many have you done in a lawsuit evaluation here?
Well, we certainly have a lot of lawsuits currently. I think it's a good comment, and we'll think about that. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from the line of Jennifer Hecker.
Hi, I just wanted to echo the affirming comments that were made previously. We're out of Florida, and we see that this action that EPA is taking as very needed in order to uphold the anti-degradation provisions of the Clean Water Act. I did want to encourage EPA to make sure that as it's reviewing Florida's proposed designated use reclassification that is currently in review by Region 4, that they ensure that these provisions are being accounted for and addressed in whatever is approved by EPA.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question or comment comes from the line of Bill Payne.
Yeah, this kind of plays off the comment a couple of comments ago about litigation, but it has to do with economic analysis. I believe an economic analysis has to be done on any new regulation, if I understand it correctly, but I was wondering if you've done any yet and have a feel for how much additional cost this is going to place upon either permittees or the states.
Thank you. I just want to say that right now we're still in the early stages of this proposal, so we don't have an estimate to provide you with, but we are working to develop cost estimates, and in particular the direct cost to states and tribes to implement these changes. So we'll make this available as part of the proposed rule.
Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question or comment comes from the line of Annette Larrabee.
Good afternoon. I'm talking in behalf of Annette Feliberti. We have a question regarding the compliance schedule and authorizing provisions. We want to clarify if what you mean is that in the water quality standards regulations, you are considering the possibility that the states and tribes have to include provisions regarding compliance schedules, and that this provision has to be approved by EPA as part of the water quality standards regulation?
Yes, that is what we're moving ahead with.
And your next question or comment comes from the line of Lee Garrington.
This is Steve Brown speaking on Lee's phone. Over the past 2 years or so, ECOS and EPA had worked to determine the appropriate costs to include in your cost analysis as you determine what EPA's rules cost states to implement. But I'm sorry to report that we were unable to come to agreement on that, and a number of factors that we believe are legitimate costs to states to implement EPA rules are not being included in the rule analysis, and we're going to keep a very close eye on whether or not you include those items in your cost determination.
Thank you, and we'd encourage you to send us a written comment, maybe outlining what you'd like to see included.
Okay, we will. Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question or comment comes from the line of Jennifer Hecker.
Since we have time, I thought I'd ask an additional question about this economic impact assessment. Is the EPA going to try to assess the lost tourism and waterfront real estate values that occur from degraded water quality or anything to account for the fact that there are costs endured from poor water quality that should be weighed against any economic cost from implementing this additional regulation to improve water quality?
Well, like I said earlier, we're still, you know, trying to develop our estimate of how much this might cost. So if that's something you'd like us to consider, we'd encourage you to send us a written comment to that effect.
Great, we will.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for participating in today's call. These were very valuable comments and insights into the revisions that we're considering for the changes to the Water Quality Standards Program. We'll certainly be taking these into consideration as we proceed with this rulemaking. We, again, as a friendly reminder, we have another public listening session this Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I think this concludes our session today.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.